We are in the great good company of Cy Montgomery and Christopher Hogwood, Bill Russell, and I, Paula Gordon. Pig magic. We're so disconnected. Well, the idea of both pig and magic.
We've sort of jumped into this, and I think most people would not. I think most people would find this a stretch.
Which? The pig or the magic?
Yes. what some people would, with a bit of a sneer, characterize as anthropomorphizing a pig. And you do a good job in setting this up of describing your childhood, of establishing relationships, perhaps better relationships with animals than with other people. And
the human animal, noted.
Well, somewhere player in there, you say somebody had accused you of being half animal, and I said, wrong. First time and last time in this book, you're not half animal. Of course, we're all animal, and that is as much as anything the point of this, that we are connected to all the things going on around us, and certainly those things that are animated, and certainly those things from our parochial standpoint that have so much in common with us. But I before we lose people to this notion that we've just sort of gone off the edge, the bond, the relationship, and you've been doing this for your entire life and certainly your professional career, has been, to me, a wonderful exercise in touching other creatures in ways that had not been, certainly not been available to me before, and were not generally available to the public. And these are just wonderful stories.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because particularly the anthropomorphic thing, that the idea that we project onto animals human characteristics. But if you believe in evolution, or if you believe in Genesis, we are told that we are all one family. And all you have to do is look at what happens to the embryo and the fetus and the baby in the womb. We all look exactly alike as we begin our journey towards birth. That's reminding us of what genetics tells us and what Genesis tells us, what every single creation story from church to science class tells us, and that we're all related. We're all family.
And all over the world, too.
I had never thought of that. Every story, every creation myth that I'm aware of, none of them begin with human.
No.
Now, there's a certain non-referential quality to that, but most of them begin with animals.
Absolutely.
There are a few that begin with a major deity, but that's a very late creation, and even the deities come from somewhere.
And does that tell you something about what those who set down these sacred texts needed to tell us? Page 1, chapter 1, the animals don't appear in chapter 7 on the last page. That's the first thing out of the mouths or the pens of those who say they were bringing us God's word. So to me, claiming that we're projecting human qualities onto animals, it's the quality of all life that we have in ourselves celebrate.
And again, listening to you, it occurs to me that a lot of these animals, I think, do precisely the opposite.
Which is?
Pig presence on human, dog presence on humans. Dogs project their own reality onto humans.
Yes, and I think
there's an adaptiveness that we don't seem to be able to.
Oh, they read us. I mean, think of parrots. Parrots are more closely related. This is going to be my next book, actually, is on birds, I hope. Parrots are more closely related to Tyrannosaurus rex than they are to you and me, and yet they can speak meaningfully to us in our language. What animal can we do that with back to them? Nobody. They're so
bonobos.
They're so good at reading us. Well, that's right. They can speak. They can speak to us too meaningfully in sign language.
Right.
And dolphins have been taught to also use computer symbols and symbolic language. Absolutely.
The bonobos that I know do not use sign language, though there are who do. The bonobos who are my friends actually use a symbolic language.
Oh, okay, great.
So there are all of these ways, and you bring to mind, because I think you keep tuning me in differently, I was somewhere recently and it was at a distance from where there were a bunch of people, and there was dessert. And all of these people kept coming toward dessert, and it looked exactly, I mean exactly, like the ants on my countertop when there was a bit of honey that I had missed. And I thought,
Well, isn't it great to be part of the continuum? I mean, doesn't that make us feel more at home on this planet? It does me. I mean, as you know, we share more than 98% of our genetic material with chimpanzees, bonobos, but we share 40% of our DNA with a daisy. That makes me feel at home and happy on this planet.
Or a tree.
Yeah.
Actually, they say it's 60% with a tree.
Oh, wow. So is it?
There 60%? Was an ancient
tree.
Well, that's probably true.
Wow.
There was a major elder murdered on Fifth Street in Atlanta yesterday, and it was a tree that had to be, it had to be from the 1700s.
Oh, my God.
And the arborist had come and said that it was going to fall apart and drop on people and kill them and stuff. But there was pain for me when that tree came down, and that's a good thing. It's
yes.
like what you say about a hard thing writing the pig book, that just because it's hard doesn't mean we should avoid it.
And that's what compassion means, doesn't it? Compassion means with suffering. And when you are compassionate, you're entering in willingly into the suffering of others.
There's a great deal of suffering in the world, and it is my Buddhist friends who tell me that the Buddha, the historical Buddha, and he who is thought of as the Buddha, was very clear that there will always be suffering. And if you think going back to the good or any other pig, there has been a lot of suffering.
Well, when
in
you
the
think
pig,
of pigs, in the pig world, he was such a great ambassador, I think, not just for pigs, but for all other species. The take-home lesson from this book, I mean, the book talks about so many things. It talks about family, it talks about love, it talks about travel. But I think the take-home lesson from this book is that a great soul can be found among us at any time, at any form. And it might be someone with a flexible nose disc and a curly tail.
A flexible nose disc.
You know, it could be somebody with fins or wings. It could be somebody who could be your, you know, could be your brother. It could be somebody from across the world who wears funny clothes and speaks in a different tongue. But we need to know that there are these great souls among us and keep watch for them and recognize them.
Well, and the Buddhist, we were talking about that. Talk about all sentient creatures. They don't get quite as wrapped up in the anthropic as humans do. Well, they're, you know, when you have a broader perspective, it changes who and what you are.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you more whole. I think, wouldn't it be awful to only listen to one kind of music, to only eat one kind of food, to only read poetry by a single poet? That's what we do when we limit our interactions and our compassion for one species.
Our own.
Exactly.
Well, we don't even, and the fact is we don't do that.
No, we don't. You're right.
Would that we got to that point.
Yeah. If we did the other, we might be a little better at applying that to our
That's
own species.
Right.
Before, it sounds like we are getting incredibly sentimental here. And it's okay to be full of sentiment, but not necessarily to be saccharine, if you will.
Mm.
Life comes from life. That is just a sometimes brutal reality. And you are a vegetarian, and yet you are also alive. Thereby, you have nourished yourself with other living things. You refrain from eating mammals and birds. You eat vegetables. You eat fish. So there is also this reality of, again, yes and. Both sides of the mountain have gold in the windows. Life does come from life. And we can be more responsible. I go back to the pig kingdom. Yes, there are many pigs who have been consumed over 40 or 100,000 years or however many, the swine family. And you don't have to have them raised in an agribusiness setting for that to be the case. So some of this take home, if you will, has to do with responsibility. It has to do with accepting, yes, there are hard realities and a yes and story.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with what we are, especially in the developed world and most particularly in America, these, to me, horrendous hog farms that are factory farms.
Yes, it's appalling. And that's one great thing that having this book out there has done, is that I have heard from so many people writing me saying, no pork on my fork, people who are trying to end that kind of suffering. But the, you know, the great thing about Christopher Hogwood was he would meet you on whatever ground you afforded him. Mm. And often you came bearing him food. I mean, he understood about food being a great pleasure. He was he was a gourmand. And he loved food.
And in abundance.
He was happy to meet you no matter who you were, no matter where you were. And he was accepting and loving and joyous, and welcomed you to him, whatever you brought to that encounter.
And you had to come to him. There was a certain, is the word, abeyance?
He would come to you on occasion.
If you lived in the neighborhood, he came to you, yes. But later on, gosh, people flocked to this pig and with their slops. I mean,
explain slops.
Okay, slops. Pigs ate a great deal. And so quite early in our relationship, Howard and I had to think about how to cause enough food to be present to feed this pig. Now, if you operate a piggery with many pigs, you find all kinds of outlets, school lunches that get uneaten, et cetera, et cetera. But we didn't need truckloads of food. We need bucket loads of food. So we used to work every dinner party, you know, every social occasion. We used to mine it for slops, for food to give to the pig. So we would, you know, go out to a party. It used to be I'd go to a party and be so shy I'd stare at the ground so much people thought I'd drop something and would help me look for it. But now I had something to say. I would talk about this wonderful pig, and soon people would ask, what does he eat? And the answer would be, everything he can.
What you got?
That's right. I mean, we didn't give him meat because we didn't want to give him the idea he could eat us. And also there's the hard fact of pig manure, if there's meat in it, it becomes an unpleasant substance and not garden gold. And he didn't like certain things. He didn't like citrus. He didn't like onions, anything in the citrus or onion family. But other than that, we basically said, why don't you come over for dinner and a show? You bring the dinner, and Chris will provide the show. And people would come over, and they would watch the operatic spectacle of his eating. And this was great.
Let me come back to this operant spectacle in just a moment. That would be as in opera. Yes. Cy Montgomery, Christopher Hogwood, Bill Russell, Paula Gordon. We'll all be back in just a moment. Join us when we return.